Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Peter Holmstrom from the Dandy Warhols and Pete International. This is an amazing conversation had over Zoom. Pete was at home in Portland, Oregon, and got up nice and early to record the podcast with me. And as you're about to find out, Pete's a really, really nice guy, super cool. And we discuss some great records, and not just his choices, but we talk shoegaze. And when it gets to the last track, I lose my mind because he talks about a band that I've been hoping and praying someone was going to mention on this podcast, and he does it. So I'm not going to say who, but you'll find out at the end. Before we get on with the episode, just a few thanks. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Also, thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. If you enjoy this and it's your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then go and have a look in the archives because there's over 150 episodes now with some of your favourite bands, actors, musicians, comedians, producers. Go and have a look because I'm sure there'll be lots of people on there whose stories you'll be interested in listening to. If that's not enough, I also have a Patreon page. You can support this podcast on Patreon. I put up standalone episodes over there. I put up video episodes over there. Normally each week I put up sort of four radio shows where I play records and chat and stuff. So there's loads of content you can get there over on Patreon. You can find out about all of this at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Let's get back to today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Peter Holmstrom. Listen up, I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label, and if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Eggfried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording, and sitting opposite me via the means of Zoom in, I imagine, I'm going to take a wild guess, Oregon. Peter Holmstrom. Correct. Hello.
Hey.
Portland, are you still there?
Yeah, still in Portland.
How is it all there? What's going on lockdown-wise?
I don't know. I mean, I'm always kind of in lockdown. This room is where I spend most of my life. Most of my waking life.
For people that can't see that, it's a very beautiful looking studio with walls of guitars and amps. So it looks like a nice kind of creative hub you've immersed yourself in there. Well, what? I mean, it's quite yeah, weird you say that, Pete, because so many creative people that I've spoken to on here have kind of said that sort of similar, sort of solitary answer that, you know, they're quite solitary people and spend most of their time either writing, you know, music, mm-hmm. comedy, you know, scripts. And that, you know, it does yeah. seem like, you know, the creative industry, as much as when you're out on stage, you're there in front of thousands of people, the kind of bones of it is quite a solitary thing.
Yeah. I do miss performing. That there's that sort of instant, you know, connection with like how you're, you know, playing for people. It's like, you know, it's a give and take. And you get, as a musician or performer, I guess, you get very used to that. And when it goes away, it does. I mean, it's always hard coming back from tour because all of a sudden it's missing.
Yeah.
And this is like, you know, for going this long without having performed, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I run a live venue as well, Pete, and it's, you know, we've been shut for nearly 5 months now, and it's crazy, man. It filters right the way through the industry, you know, all the way to, you know, the guys that supply the toilets at festivals. Do you know what I mean? It's like all of these industries are just, they're all just fucked. And I'm just hoping that, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, gets a bit brighter a little bit sooner and everyone can get back to doing these things safely and yeah, normal service will resume. Fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Track one, Pete. The song with the greatest ever intro.
Okay. I mean, there's so many. but the song I've been obsessing on for the last few years, it's just like, as soon as it comes on, the you know, I just, little tingles on my spine. So, Fascination Street by The Cure.
Oh.
It's just like that, those little sounds in the beginning, I mean, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the same bass line all the way through, but it starts with that, and that, you know, it takes a while before the singing starts. And it's, to me, that's kind of the one that I'm, you know, that's the one I picked.
That's such a good shout. Because that you're right insofar as that bass line don't change. Why would you change that? Because it's perfect,
there's
isn't
no need
it?
To. Yeah.
It
yeah.
just thunders and, throughout.
Yeah. And that the tone of it is just, it's just captivating. It's like I was really seriously, very seriously trying to replicate that a little bit, and like borrowed basses and, you know, just to try and find this kind of magic combination. Getting close, still not there though.
what's mad is, like, you know, that was I'm sure that was a single. I don't know if it was the lead single from Disintegration. Maybe that was Love Song or what was the other
thing? Yeah, I don't know.
But that's not, and because I'm using this as a way to tie into a question for you here, Pete. But I find it really mad that was a single, yet most records now are pretty much finished by the time that snare roll comes in at the beginning of Fascination Street. You know, yeah. it's all about the intro, and then it just builds and builds and builds. So
yeah.
What I'm going to ask you is, and I ask most, you know, musicians this question when they come on a podcast, is when you first started writing records with the Dandies, you know, way back, the way that you approached songwriting then, has that changed in the way that you approach songwriting now? And the reasons I want to know that is because of the way that people listen to music now, and the fact that radio is a completely different game now, and Spotify is here, and I just want to know how your sort of songwriting has changed over your approach to it has changed over the years.
Back then I didn't really write songs. I maybe came up with some chord changes here and now. I I don't know. Some people would say I still don't write songs, but I do put complete pieces of music together and then get somebody to sing on them. Back then, it just was however the chords needed to be, however they came together, like whatever it, I was really always just following them kind of to see what needed to be put on top of, you know, to keep, to create the mood that, you know, was in my head. And I still do that. The Dandies, like maybe specifically Courtney, I don't think he does. He is more like sort of fine-tuned his idea of songwriting, and it does fit more into the sort of modern way people listen to music.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's, you know, there is no, the intros don't, are like almost non-existent.
Yeah.
You know, I love intros, and I keep wanting to have longer ones. We'll get there. But
I mean, you've chose, you know, a track from Disintegration, which it's certainly my favorite Cure album. I don't know if it is yours, Pete, but I think it's just an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, as I mean, I it's so hard to pick. I might have favorite songs from different records,
yeah,
but as a whole record, I think that really works really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my favorite Cure songs change. I don't know. It's always hard to pick, yeah, what's at the top, but
there's a strange weight to that album. It's like,
yeah,
it's heavy in a different way to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a really weighty-sounding album. It's, whether it's the production or not, it sounds thick. It sounds...
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's heavy and beautiful,
yeah,
and dark, and, you know, and those are like things that I like strive to achieve with my personal records.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few of those, which, you know, I think like Vanishing Point and Exterminator and Evil Heat by Primal Scream are all kind of in that category where I'm always like, that like some of Spiritualized and Massive Attack also have that aspect.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of, I'm always trying to get my records close to that level.
Yeah.
You know,
that's good company to be in, Pete.
I, you know, you set your goals high.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. For track two, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Okay, I got two for this, or okay. I've got a runner up.
All right.
The first one, and I don't know the artist because I forgot to look. But and it may have been from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, just because I know it's that same era. But the Killing Me Softly, I can't remember. I at one point I did know who sang that, but
Roberta Flack, the original.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. That song. It's the first one where I truly remember like feeling something.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, back when I was, I don't know, I didn't have like built up, you know, feelings or whatever that would make me have like some sort of knee jerk reaction to that, or like, ew. It was, you know, I think it was pretty true.
What do you think that emotion was?
I just like the her voice and the way she sang it, just like what she was trying to convey. Like, I feel like it got through to me. You know, whether I knew what it was or not, I mean, I was pretty young. Say I would have been, I don't know, 7.
Yeah. And so if you hear that now, does that take you somewhere?
Take you back somewhere straight away? Yeah. Uh-huh. To a Portland that was a very, very different place.
Yeah. what would your second choice be for this one, Peter?
So the second choice was Save a Prayer by Duran Duran. Nice. That was, you know, when I was a teenager in high school, and it was more, I don't know. It fits more with who I am now, I suppose. And my musical taste now. It was probably one of the things that helped form like my musical taste now. So, yeah. It's like specifically it's Nick Rhodes' keyboards on that, which I think is like probably the most genius thing he's ever done. It's like getting that much of emotion out of a synth is impressive.
Am I right in saying, did he produce a Dandy's record?
Yeah, absolutely. He produced Welcome to the Monkey House.
How was that?
That was a very, very weird, frustrating record for us. Because there was, it started out with us like moving in, like the day we moved into our studio the space that we created our studio was 9/11, you know, and
it's not really the greatest starting point, is it?
No, it's like we woke up to like that news, and then we all went down there and started doing some demolition, because that like definitely helped us feel a little bit better. So that's kind of where it started. And then there was some weird, like we were trying to do it ourselves, because we thought we knew how to use Pro Tools. We didn't. We had bought a bunch of equipment we barely knew how to use. We had borrowed like this amazing rack of like 40s and 50s compressors and limiters that that had been used on just like a ton of like really cool records in Portland. You know, we had all this stuff that we just didn't know our way around at all.
Is that punk, or is that just being dumb? What one is it?
it's dumb, but it's also like the arrogance that you know, the of being young, I guess. And coming off, it's like we still didn't, like Bohemian Like You hadn't hit yet. So we were on we needed to do like 13 Tales was not a successful record at that point.
Really?
Oh yeah. cause it was like maybe October of 2011 where, or 2001, that the Vodafone ad happened.
Yeah.
And Parlophone re-released Bohemian Like You, and it went to number 5 like early November. So it wasn't until then that you know that record started doing anything. In most of the world, it was already gold in Australia. They caught on earlier. Anyway, we worked on Monkey House for about a year. And then Nick Rhodes, I don't even remember how he got involved. But he did some keyboards and, stuff on The Last High. And then the idea to have him, then Courtney and Brent went over there to England to do some more tracking with vocals and synths. And, that's when it sort of like Nick had done enough that it actually made sense to, call him a co-producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, while we're,
Sorry, that was a little long and convoluted.
No, that's exactly no. This podcast is always at its best when these, you know, the stories are just that. Sorry, the tracks are just the kind of anchor points. I like it when it pinballs off everywhere. You know, that's when you know the interesting chat starts to unfold. And we touched on school earlier, so I'm just going to ask you now for track 3. The song reminds you of your time at school.
So the one that pops to mind, isn't necessarily a track. It's a record. 'Cause I don't honestly know what I heard first. But there was a day in school where, this friend of mine, she always somehow like had cooler music than the rest of us, but she just said, listen to this, and like put her like headphones on her Walkman on my ears and played me Psycho Candy.
Wow.
And it was just like, I didn't know what it was. I did not understand it. But there was something about it that made me want to like go out, buy it, listen to it, you know, kind of obsessively to try and figure out what it was.
How old would you have been?
I was probably about 16, maybe. It had just come out in the US. I assume, I mean, I honestly don't know.
That's a heavy record to put on someone's ear holes with a set of headphones for the first time.
Yeah, with like, I didn't know who the Velvet Underground was at that point. The whole idea of noise being useful in music was not something that I was like could comprehend. Yeah. I never heard anything like it. So it was pretty life changing.
How was school, Pete? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. It cut out.
Sorry. Did you enjoy school, Pete?
Mostly, I guess. I mean, I didn't enjoy I guess I was fine with it. I didn't do all that well. Well enough, I guess. Everybody, all my report cards said things about doesn't apply himself.
I think I've got a fair few of them too. Was you a creative kid?
Yeah. My parents always like sort of encouraged us to draw and just use our imaginations. I grew up without a television, so reading and the radio were key. You know, listening to, there was always music on. It wasn't necessarily It's a lot of classical music. And my parents listened to like the Beatles and some Pink Floyd, and there was, I think, a Bob Marley record and a lot of like 60s folk.
Yeah.
And they also, like, they weren't very musical themselves, but they always like had us like in some music lessons of some kind. So, you know, learned just a little bit of a lot of things like growing up, and then, yeah.
Did you know what you wanted to do when you was at school? Did you have any idea that music was going to be something you wanted to pursue?
I knew I wanted to do music or art. And I thought that you had to be a lot more talented to do music. I didn't understand, that sort of, I just didn't understand how it worked. I thought that there was no way that I was ever going to be good enough to do music as, I don't think I ever thought of it as a job, but to do it more than, you know, a high school band kind of thing. So I ended up going to college for art. And still dabble in that a little bit, but more design stuff than truly art.
You mentioned was this one of the questions that you had two answers for? I know before we started chatting, you were saying that there's the school question might be one that there's more than one.
For school days?
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff like there's a few. A few other records that come to mind. I mean, it's like for when I was in college was the first time I heard My Bloody Valentine. That sort of falls into that because it's another like record that just changed my thoughts of how what music was supposed to be or could be.
Yeah.
And then I suppose a little earlier than the Mary Chain. For some reason, that first Frankie Goes to Hollywood record, like, that sort of kicked me out of my heavy metal period.
Yeah.
And was just like, oh, this is cool. What is this?
You've chose so many records that sonically were pioneering there, whether that be Trevor Horn's work on Frankie, yeah. You know, and then you look at, you know, Loveless and things like that. I mean, fucking hell. They're all really, really heavy fucking records, you know, but all different ways of doing it. Do you know what I mean? It's great.
Yeah.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode, so you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Well, I guess this applies to you being a young guy as well. For track four, Peter, what was the first song you remember buying from a record store?
Okay, this is one I want to have. I want to have two picks for too.
Okay, that's cool.
Because the first record that I did actually buy from a record store was like a Best of the Beach Boys compilation, and it wasn't necessarily my own tastes. I was taking some guitar lessons from some guy down in the neighborhood, with a bunch of other of my friends, and it was his taste. Like, he wanted to teach us how to play Beach Boys songs. So that's why I bought the Beach Boys record. So technically first record that I bought, right. But
okay.
With my own tastes, God, I got them almost at the same time, so I don't remember which was first, but I bought Back in Black and I think a Blondie record at the same time. And I don't know which Blondie record it wasn't. I think it was like a later one, like maybe it was The Hunter or something. It was okay. Yeah. Not a great one for what they're known for.
Yeah.
But I remember somebody had told me about Blondie, and so I didn't know the song, or I was probably looking for a song and I just didn't know what it was called and was just picked a record.
I think there was lots of young guys that picked up a record that had Debbie Harry on the cover and just went and bought it, you know, for that.
Yeah. Moment,
you know, there wasn't, you know, I've spoke about Debbie Harry a few times on this podcast, and, you know, aside from just being, you know, beautiful, she was so fucking cool. Like, she just
unbelievably cool.
So cool. Yeah. Like, and still is super fucking cool. Like, things like the Beach Boys and things like Blondie, as you grew older and your tastes, you know, become more defined, did you then go back and re-explore like Blondie and you know, from the, I imagine the best of the Beach Boys is going to be full of, you know, Surfing USA and I Get Around and things like that. Did you then go back and have the Pet Sounds, you know, moment? And,
you know, I not so much with the Beach Boys. There was something, I mean, I get it. I understand why people, you know, obsess on Pet Sounds and, you know, but that was never really my thing. Not after I found, you know, Mary Chain. And I mean, even though, you know, they cover Surfing USA. But it was, I've always needed a little bit of darkness, in the music that I truly. So, yeah.
Did that?
They always felt a little too light,
yeah,
for me.
So, you mentioned like Valentine's and that. So, like, so kind of around the time of that, was the other kind of British shoegaze scene, was that making a dent where you was? You know, were bands like Ride and Chapter House and, you know, all of it, and Slow Dive, were they making waves where you was?
Yeah, I mean, that was when I was in college in New York, that's what I was totally into that whole thing. I had, you know, early Charlatans stuff pretty much from the day I first heard it. Same with Stone Roses, actually took a bit. But I did find that. And Ride was later too. Slow Dive is kind of funny because I was in the Tower Records in New York on Broadway, and in the just like going through singles or something, CD singles, like looking for whatever the newest Charlatans thing or some My Bloody Valentine thing that I didn't have. I don't know. And the girl that worked there, like, came up to me and like tapped me on the shoulder or whatever, because she thought that I was in Slow Dive. Cause I had the bowl haircut and was apparently wearing something similar. I guess to Neil, I'm not sure, who she thought I was, but because of that, I ended up buying the first Slow Dive record.
Brilliant.
And loved it. And have like bought everything since, and didn't get to see them until just a few years ago, but, it was great.
Do you know,
it was really cool.
I didn't ever get to see them until a couple of years ago. I bizarrely, I saw them supporting The Cure with Ride as well. So it was great. It was just, it was a day of just feeling young again. I just went there and it was pure nostalgia. It was beautiful. So I guess you mentioned moving to go to a university at New York, or college at New York. Yeah. So for track five, I imagine it was probably around then you got your kind of first taste of clubbing, I imagine. So for track five, Peter, the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
High school is when I started going out to clubs. Okay. I used to sneak out my window, and a friend would come pick me up, and we'd go to this local, like, you know, underage dance club. So the first time I was there, at this dance club, I heard, Every Day is Halloween by Ministry.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was. So I kept asking people, like, what is this track? What is this? What is this? And somebody told me it was Love and Rockets. So like the next chance I got, I went and bought everything I could find by Love and Rockets, which was their first record and a couple singles. And I think Ball of Confusion had just come out.
Yeah.
So that's the song. It was like Ball of Confusion by Love and Rockets is like that kind of, it started a whole, like, you know, I don't know, tangent of, you know, from Love and Rockets, Tones on Tail, Bauhaus, I don't know, Jazz Butcher, because Dave J played with the Jazz Butcher, you know, Dallas Carr, all sorts of stuff. Like, it really sent me out all over the place musically.
That's some crazy music being played in them clubs. You know, I thought you was going to say, oh, you know, it's Madonna and Prince. And it was like,
oh God, no.
Bauhaus and Ministry, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. I got lucky.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally.
And the funny thing is I, it took me years to figure out who that song was by.
Yeah.
Like I kind of forgot about it. And then, you know, and yeah.
And so as the Dandy Warhols, their trajectory into, you know, big, you know, global commercial success, like, how was, you know, was there lots of kind of clubbing then, sort of later on, or was it just kind of after show parties and things, or, you know, was there clubbing and partying and dancing then?
A little bit, not so much, just like after show parties, really. In the beginning, when we first started out, our original drummer was also like a DJ. Like he DJed at local raves and stuff. So we were actually, you know, going to a bunch of that sort of things, like some of these weird ones that were up in the woods where people just camped and you know, totally illegal, like the kind of the best kind.
Yeah.
And then a lot of like the ones that were just in clubs in town. But yeah, we were a little bit tied into that scene just because of our drummer. Yeah. But I don't know. It was just an excuse to take drugs and dance. It wasn't necessarily that we really liked the music or anything. Yeah. And I know that some of that vibe like carried into our first record a little bit, but
yeah. Yeah. Okay. For track six, I was just thinking then my brain just went straight back to when you was talking about Exterminator and stuff, and just the thought of Bobby Gillespie stumbling into these raves and hearing Andy Weatherall, and then just thinking, right, okay, maybe we should have a little less guitar and see what we can come up with. And obviously fast forward a year, there's Screamadelica that just completely fucking changed everything.
Yeah.
You know? Favorite song from an artist from your home county, Pete?
Yeah, that's kind of a broad, it's a big country.
County.
Oh, county.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like local, like yeah. Right here. Oh, I read that wrong.
Yeah, you won't be the first, mate. There's about 30 people have all done that as well, so don't worry, you're not alone.
I should be wearing my glasses. I never do. Okay. Well, that kind of ties in with this question number seven too. There is a singer who I work with on with Pete International Airport, named Jason Adams, and I met him way back when he had a band called The Upside Down. And then his first band was The Bell Below, sorry. Then it was The Upside Down. Then it was Daydream Machine. Then it was Mother Mariposa. Now he's doing his own record, but he's just a great human being and always coming up with cool music and always like surrounding himself with an eclectic bunch of musicians. And he's really, really cool. So favorite song?
Yeah. Because I'll put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this, Pete. So I'll put a few of his tunes on there. Am I right in saying that The Upside Down had some commercial success, didn't they? I'm sure.
They did. They we put out a record of theirs on our label when we tried to do that. They got a lot of like advertisement and film, and TV, stuff on that record. That definitely, okay, I'm going to have to look up to figure out what song, though. Because this one, it threw me a little bit. Because I was going to say the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Okay, well, let's talk about them.
All right.
So have you been working with members of the band?
Of
Brian Jonestown?
I've worked with... years, and two Jules records, I think. And then Anton put out my last record, last Pete International record. So, working with them.
So do you still get lots of people? I've got to reference it because I'd done a kind of like audio, or I guess a video podcast, of the top five music documentaries ever made, and I put Dig at number one because I honestly think it's I'm not alone. Like, there's so many people regard that as one of the greatest music docs of all time, and you know, is that something that gets mentioned to you that often?
All the time, It'd be great if it was a little bit more of an actual documentary.
What do you mean by that?
It's the filmmaker used the footage that she shot. Most of it, I assume, is like, actually, filmed as it happened. I know a lot of stuff that we did for her was when she was hanging out with us was, she'd hear something and then she'd go, "Oh, wait, say that again," grab the camera and point at us. So there was a lot of like sort of recreating. And then there's actual recreating, like the shots of us recording for 13 Tales, I think, is she wasn't there. She came up later and then we sort of pretended to, so she got some footage. But she used all that to tell a story that wasn't actually like, there was no competition between the bands.
Yeah.
There was no real rivalry more than, some flippant comments, which she used to great effect. There definitely wasn't on our side. I mean, it's like we were just busy doing our best, try to do what we did, so it was, I don't know, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
So I've seen it a couple times in various different forms, but I can't watch it anymore.
Yeah.
And I know Anton's definitely the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah. I mean, cause both him and Courtney kind of came out badly, for very different reasons. And, you know, I know that both of them have suffered like because of questions and people's reactions to the film.
Really?
Well, Anton for years had people just showing up at his shows trying to get him to freak out.
Yeah.
And so he, like, there was years of like shows dissolving into like chaos. Yeah. And being unable to play the songs. And luckily that's gone away. And, you know, then he was able to play music and it did eventually do good for him.
Yeah.
Or more good than harm, I think, because it brought him to the attention of the world. And I mean, it did, like, we got like crazy negative reviews about our record that came out right after that, where they didn't talk about the record. They just talked about what they thought or who they thought Courtney was, or, you know, or what they thought that the band had sold out or whatever, you know. It's just a bunch of bullshit.
But as you said, like, you know, in time, that's just the review that disappears and the music stands there still. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that'll always stand alone and be testament to, you know, to your work.
Yeah.
So,
but it's funny that there's still people that feel like they have to choose one band or the other. And sure, people are going to like one band or the other. That's fine. But to think that, like, we played the sort of funniest, weirdest one was we played, a little psych festival in Paris a few years ago. And while we were playing, some kids thought that, like, they hung a sign off the balcony saying, "We like Jonestown better," or whatever. And it's like, great. Why do you think you need to show us that? It's that, like, is
that's just fucking dumb, man. Like, you know, it's
whatever.
I'm sure people don't go to Blur gigs now.
It's like
start shouting about, we love Liam Gallagher, not you. It's like, you know, it's just cheap press, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's just go for the music.
Yeah.
So for track 7, I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that many may not know that you want them to hear. And I know that you've mentioned your friend from the Upside Down on track 6. Is there another song that you think some of my listeners may not know that you'd like to sort of point them in the direction of?
Well, I mean, I was going to say a specific track from the band that he's doing currently, which is Mother Mariposa. And the track was Changing Shape. I mean, it could be anyone off the record. I think it's a really, really cool record.
Cool.
But that was the specific one. The other one that works that I always tell people about here, though it's probably not as big of a deal where you are, is 6x7.
Oh, but the band.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. No one talks about that band, right? So Close by 6x7, my favorite ever intro.
Yeah. Oh,
just
yeah?
That piano, that dong, 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 dong. And yeah. then anyone that sings the lyric, "I'm so close to being more than I've ever been," Pete, you've just lit a fucking fire in me here. 6x7 are fucking incredible, man. Not in a band. They're fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We toured with them back when we were touring on Come Down, and Chris and I have like kept in touch. We have a little project that we do together, but it's funny. It's like nobody really heard them over here, and they're so good. I guess the track that it's hard to pick one, but what is it? It was a single that came out. It was
Candlelight.
No, it was later. It was like England and a Broken Radio. or and then 10 was it 10 places to die or something. Either one of those tracks it's a different thing, but it's super cool. Just
they're such a cool band, Pete, and I can see the connection from The Cure to, you know, all the way through, you know, it's fucking heavy, intense music. And he's just got such a kind of non-heavy voice as well. He's just got a really sort of smooth, cool voice that just flows over it. And that fucking band blow my mind. They blow my fucking mind. And it's like, I'm so glad someone's mentioned that band on this podcast, because no one has to date.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that I've screwed up the question six.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. I wouldn't have said them normally, because I know they had more success in the UK, not as much as they deserved. Mm-hmm. But I know that you know, a fair amount of people do know of them.
Yeah.
So,
More people should, though. That question's never been answered any better than right there, Pete. So, as we find ourselves coming out of lockdown in some way, shape, or form, what's happening for Pete International, and what's happening for Dandies? What you got coming up next year? I'm saying next year because I'm presuming next year is when things maybe start to kick back in
again. Yeah. So the Dandies have been working on a record. I mean, we had started a little bit before lockdown. So it kind of kept going. It kind of maybe speeded it up a little bit. I mean, we're still a ways off. We're making a rock record, which isn't necessarily the rock that I would prefer, but it'll be a Dandies twist on it, and we'll see what comes out in the end. But it's been fun. I've been breaking out all the fuzz pedals and seeing, like, writing riff. Stuff like that. And that's a little bit of a new approach for me. I generally write riffs. It's fun. It's still pretty early days, but we've got, cause nothing's close to being done. No song is close to being done, but there's probably about 8 songs at this point. So we just need a few more of the ideas to coalesce into a song.
Cool.
Cause there's tons of ideas. So there's that, we're starting a whole full program of releasing little snippets of ideas and little things that we create. I think we just put out a video today, actually, for one of the tracks off the sort of ambient record that we released earlier this year. And there'll just be a continuation of little things put out there. For Pete International, I'm getting close to being finished with the record. I'm waiting on lyrics on two, or singers to finish lyrics on two that are definitely on the record. And then there's two more spaces that I, because I have to have 11 songs. So there's two more tracks that, like, I have a lot of music, but I don't know who's singing on them yet. So I'm still kind of figuring that out.
Okay.
But sometimes that goes quick. Sometimes it takes forever. And then I'll have to mix. So that record will definitely be out next year.
So if people want to kind of keep up to speed on what's happening, where's a good place to follow what you're up to, Pete?
Following me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook is the best. I'm not great at it. I don't post the way I should. Yeah. I just forget about it. And I'm like, oh.
Well, if it's cool with you, when I put this out, if I tag you in it, then people can go and explore your music and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Pete, thanks so much for getting up and doing this. It's really kind of you, and I've really enjoyed chatting tunes with you.
I love the list of songs. It made me think about a bunch of stuff that I never or how I essentially how I ended up to where I am now.
That's great.
Yeah, it's cool.
Wicked. Pete, thanks so much, mate.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There you have it. 6x7. Officially, Pete is now my new best friend. It was a long time coming. Someone was going to mention that band, and it happened, and it's made my night. Thanks loads for listening. Massive thanks to Pete for giving up his time and getting up early in Portland to record this. Go and follow Pete's stuff. Go and follow Pete in the National, and then obviously keep your eyes peeled for the new Dandies record when that drops. I'll tag Pete in the post on the socials for this, so give him a follow and drop him a message, let him know what you thought of his song choices, and thanks ever so much for listening. Like I say, you can support the podcast on Patreon as well and get access to probably another 100 or so episodes over there and loads of other bits and pieces that you don't get on your weekly normal release. Find out about everything and merch and anything else you need to know about this podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. See you next time. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.